Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. It's the end of Labour Party conference and we're now preparing for the Conservative one. So what have been the lessons learnt and how does Jeremy Corbyn's week up in Liverpool set up the Tories for their week in Birmingham? I'm Fraser Nelson and I'm joined by James Forsyth, our political editor, and by Brandon Lewis, the chairman of the Conservative Party. So James, Labour, of course, a tale of utter confusion and chaos in the Brexit strategy, but generally speaking, we ended the week with Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell coming out with pretty radical ideas, getting given huge, almost rapturous reception by the audience they've got there. I'm trying to work out if the Conservatives are going to be encouraged or discouraged by what they've seen up in Liverpool.
I mean, the challenge for the Tory party is that Jeremy Corbyn's conference speech was designed to sound like common sense, or relatively moderate, actually disguising some very radical ideas. So he talked about, you know, he wants inclusive ownership funds so that workers should share in the most successful businesses. That sounds like something that most people, if they heard that in the news, would say, that sounds fair enough. What he doesn't say is, what I'm actually talking about is every year the government confiscating without compensation 1% of a company's equity. So the challenge then becomes to the Tories to unpick something that sounds quite popular. You know, free childcare for everybody, 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds, you know, maximum price you have to pay for that, £4 an hour. All sorts of things that sound popular, and the Tories then have to sound like the Grinch explaining why you can't have it. Or defending businesses, lots of which, as David Lincoln says in an interview with us, are not making themselves easy to defend because they're paying their CEOs so much money. I think that is the kind of challenge. And then I think on Brexit, Labour actually ended up in quite a clever position because Jeremy Corbyn has essentially said, oh yeah, I'll back a Brexit deal, Theresa May, if you stay in the customs union, by which point she has hit upon one of the fundamental divides in the cabinet on Brexit policy. And again, you'll see, I don't think it'll be long before you see some of the Nicky Morgans of this world on the Tory backbenches saying, well, hang on a second, we can get Labour votes to pass this Brexit deal if you're prepared to give on that ground. So don't worry so much about Jacob Rees-Mogg and the ERG. I think he's quite cleverly inserted the Labour Party into this Tory split on Brexit.
And Brandon, what did you make watching Labour?
Well, I think James makes a very fair point, actually, around what is underneath what the Labour Party's frontline sounds like, in the sense of actually what they've described for business would reduce the amount of jobs, it would hurt pensioners because it would affect pension funds as it takes away equity, and actually would send a lot of businesses potentially to the wall in terms of the increases in tax they're talking about are way beyond what many companies make in profit, and that's bad for the economy, bad for jobs.
But so when you say increases in tax, you mean confiscating the shares?
I mean, well, a mixture of, if you take the confiscation of the shares, the equity, but also what they're talking about with corporation tax, moving corporation tax back to 26% when we're moving to 17%, there's a lot of businesses who work on margins smaller than that difference. That will affect jobs, that affects hardworking people. And actually, I do think there is a real challenge for the Labour Party in terms of, you know, what Corbyn said in his speech at conference around the position they've taken on Brexit, of course, follows on Monday, where in the space of an hour and a half, they had three different positions and opening the door to a second referendum, extending Article 50, a whole range of things there. It'd be interesting to see how long Keir Starmer stays in the shadow cabinet.
And James, do you think the Tory conference is going to be as overshadowed by Brexit as Labour was? I mean, sure, we had Labour's sideshow, but the upshot of Labour was a very strong domestic message. And I'm wondering if the Tories even have a very strong domestic message right now.
I think it'll be almost impossible for Tory conference not to be dominated by Brexit. I mean, it is the single biggest political issue. It's an issue which creates greater passions in the Tory party at the moment than anything else. And we're obviously in this question, which is, what is going to happen to Theresa May's Brexit policy after Salzburg? And there is a feeling that things are up for grabs. And you know that Boris Johnson is going to blow into town on Tuesday with his new Brexit plan. And that's obviously going to send the media wild into a kind of frenzy. It's going to be one of those kind of classic Boris ones. Oh, I didn't realise everyone would turn up to watch this. So I think that is a challenge. And I think the other question is for the Tory party is, what is the story it is trying to tell at the moment? And I think that this is part of the problem, which is, In the 2017 general election, the Tory party tried to sell a slightly different story about itself and its relationship to business and capitalism.
Well, you mean when Theresa May started to basically snarl at business and
working on boards and all these things?
Yeah.
that didn't reap the electoral dividends that many people close to Theresa May thought it would. And the Tory party hasn't quite yet worked out what its new message is. You sometimes have little bits of it about technology and all this stuff, but there is a challenge right now for the Tory party in working out what its message on that stuff is. And I think there's also another challenge, which is defending its record. I think it is quite astonishing this week that you had Labour going after academies and free schools, two things that have massively driven up education standards. And yet, if the Tory party responded to that attack, I really didn't see it. I mean, where is the education secretary? It is bizarre how these successes go unheralded and undefended.
And that's a good point, Brandon. What is the Tory response? Has there been a Tory response to the free school position from Labour this week?
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, we're very clear about the fact that it's Labour moving back to a position from, you know, before the Blair years. Actually, the academies and the free schools and the reforms that the Conservative Party have seen overseen since 2010 have seen this phenomenal improvement in educational standards. Roughly 2 million children getting a good and outstanding education more than before.
And is
that's
that
good
due
for our long-term
free schools
economy
and academies or something else?
I think it's due to a whole range of reforms that the academies have absolutely championed and taken forward. In my own constituency, I've seen a couple of really badly failing schools as they've become academies and taken a different approach with leadership. They've transformed. And actually one, which has been all over the national news about this time last year, in one academic year, the shift is phenomenal to the benefit of the pupils. Great Yarmouth High School, actually. It was on a load of media last year because it got a new head teacher, came in September, demanded better standards, more discipline, and the phenomenal shift, the improvement in their results in 1 year has just been outstanding. And that's down to that approach to education that only the Conservative Party can facilitate.
I'm a great fan of free schools and academies too, but what I can't work out is if they've improved standards for so many communities, take the Great Yarmouth there, and anybody who enjoys the benefit of kids at that vastly improved school ought to be horrified at what they hear coming out of a Labour Party conference, that they go back into local authority control. And yet, there doesn't seem to be much affection for academies and free schools. We're 8 years into this programme. In fact, more than that if you include the city academies of the Blair years. And it seems to be a genie that Jeremy Corbyn looks quite capable of sticking back into the bottle.
Well, I think that partly assumes that the great residents of Great Yarmouth were listening to the Labour Party conference in the first place. But I think, look, I think there is a job for us to do. And one of the things I think we've got to do at this conference and going forward in the Conservative Party is we've got to make sure we are telling the story about why what we are doing in government is benefiting people all over the country. And not just talk, as we sometimes are tempted into doing, in numbers and facts and figures, but actually telling the story about why that education is changing, the difference that makes to the opportunities that children are going to have in the future as our economy grows, have more job opportunities, therefore more secure future and a better future than we had in our past. And I think we've got a job to do around that. One of the focuses for us, the Commons this year, is about telling that positive story about our domestic agenda. But also, remember, this is a members' conference. And as chairman of the party, I'm determined to make sure our members have a good conference. We've got more member activity, more members than we've had for a very long time coming to conference, and that's a good thing.
But do you think there is a difference between Labour enthusiasm and Tory enthusiasm? I mean, take, you know, James, we saw the reception Jeremy Corbyn got for his speech, several standing ovations. The last time I saw so many standing ovations, it was Ian Duncan-Smith's notorious speech where they were forced to, like chickens of an electrical impulse attached to them. They had to stand up and applaud. Where they're doing a spontaneous, Corbyn seemed to be surprised. Isn't it the case that the Tories literally couldn't pay people to give that sort of response to their policies right now?
So I make one prediction. I think we are underestimating the warmth of the reception Theresa May will get, for this reason, which is everyone in this room has seen Theresa May give a whole bunch of speeches since last year's disaster when, you know, she lost her voice, the cough, the set falling on top of her, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so we've gone through that moment of, oh, credit to her for getting back up and doing it again. Most of the activists in the hall will not have seen her speak since last year. So I think that they will give her a... I mean, I know Number 10 are paranoid, and one cabinet minister tells me about her being slow hand clapped and all this other stuff because of Europe.
Well, by the activists.
But, yeah, but I don't think that will be the case. I think they'll give her massive credit for A, getting up on the stage. And the EU have every cloud as a silver lining. They did her one favour at Salzburg. If at Salzburg they had been nice about Chequers, she would have been defending Chequers in her conference speech. Instead now, she is the Prime Minister demanding that the EU treats Britain with respect. act. And if you can't get a standing ovation from a Tory conference for saying that sentence, then you know something. Then you really have got a bad cough. So I think in a way that is easier. I think one thing that Brandon won't appreciate me saying this, but one thing that everyone's going to be watching for is what are the ambitious cabinet ministers? What kind of speech do they give? So who is going to do the personal credo? Who is going to tell their life story? Because there are a lot of people in the Tory party who think that this is, you know, the last conference before, you know, that there might well have been a leadership contest by the time of the next conference.
So we'll and be looking out for who? For Sajid Javid? For Dominic Raab?
I think we are looking to see who decides to speak about themselves, mm-hmm. who decides to speak about their story. Now, I also would say this. I think the really canny leadership candidate is the person who eschews all that, you know, goes under the radar, because, you know, there is no worse place to be in any Tory leadership contest than being the front runner, because you have a massive target
completely.
On your back.
And even so, now, with things I'm hearing people say about Sajid Javid, it's quite striking. The guy's only been the front runner for a few months, and already half the cabinet wants him dead.
That will be one of the things that everyone will be watching for, is, you know, if anyone starts talking about their childhood, their upbringing, what they learned from their parents, it'll be leadership bid headline straight away.
Obviously. Brendan, how many conferences have you been to?
This year, I think, is my 20th.
20th, right. And they've changed a lot over the years, haven't they? Well, I'm trying to think, because James and I, and all journalists, we speak in terms of these conferences being this great active meeting between the leadership and party members. And sure, there'll be lots of party members there. But when you and I first started going to these conferences 20 years ago, they were all by the sea. They were by the sea because activists couldn't afford expensive accommodation. There were lots of cheap accommodation in Brighton and in Blackpool. And over the years, it has changed from being activist-orientated to being kind of, I wouldn't say lobbyist-orientated, but people who are basically paid to be there, as I am, as James will be. And I think I saw some figures recently saying that only a quarter of those in the Tory party conference are actually not paid to be there in one way or another. How much of a genuine barometer do you think the conference is about the feeling of the party? Because when you look at the whole now, who's applauding the Prime Minister, who's not, you can look around there and see a good number of people who are basically not party members at all. They're people, they're exhibitors, they're delegates, and it's become professionalised in a way which means it's not as useful an indicator as what the Conservative Party membership think.
Well, look, I think there's two things. I think James is right. I think you'll see the party members at conference very warmly responding to the Prime Minister, not least of all, actually, because, you know, I probably spend more time around the country in my job as chairman with our party than pretty much anybody else. And there is a real affection and a respect and a support for the Prime Minister, not least of all, because she has spent many, many years herself going out and being part of the party. She's absolutely a party person. I think our members love that about her. But I also think, comes more generally, this year, I think you'll see, and I'd like to hope you will see, as the chairman responsible for conference, a bit of an evolution of conference this year. So there is more happening on the fringe. There are more member events. There's more member interaction, starting with myself on Sunday, but on other days as well. Members will get to directly quiz ministers.
Are you planning a great personal credo of speech, by the way?
I'm not sure that my child is of great interest to the membership of the Conservative Party. I think making sure we get the party fit for the local elections and ready for them next year is the key job they want me focused on. But look, I think giving them a chance to quiz me and quiz other ministers over the days, to have their say in the hall. There's more members' events. We're going to have some interaction around policy that they can get involved with. This is going to be a much more member-led conference, and I hope they really enjoy it. And we've got more members coming than we've had for a few years. We've got record numbers of young people coming. Roughly
how many
double.
Members are coming?
I can't remember the exact number, actually, but it is up on the last few years. And of young people under 25 is roughly 20% of the attendees, and that's roughly double what it was last year. So We're really seeing the members wanting to get involved.
Yeah. but right now, the Labour Party has got 500,000 members, which is more members than every other party put together. I think Labour is now the biggest political party in the whole of Europe. The SNP has also seen its membership transformed. I remember after the referendum, I couldn't believe it, as members of my own family were signing up to join the SNP. So now and again, parties do kind of go viral with membership. Any chance of the Conservatives doing the same?
Well, look, I think there's a couple of things there. First of all, our membership has been increasing steadily this year. We're working hard because, you know, we have a membership-based organisation. I want to grow the membership.
But it costs also a fiver, doesn't it, if you're under 25?
If you're under 25, yeah. But I think there's also, you've got to think about whether we're comparing like with like. A big part of that Labour membership was that reduced discounted fee that they do that we don't have. But actually, what we do have...
A fiver is quite cheap, isn't
it? Well, if under 25, but Labour do this £3 affiliated membership thing for everybody, which we don't have.
And how much is the full Conservative Party?
£25.
Right. Now, that is not exactly a deal breaker either.
No, but as I say...
If I was a UKIP member, I think that's quite good value if I get to choose the Labour Party.
If you bear in mind, I gave our membership figures out at Spring Forum this year. It's 124,000 at that point. But on top of that, there are 350,000 members of Conservative clubs around the country. That puts us, and we've got people who are going out campaigning week in, week out, who are not full paid up members of the party, but they're supporters or activists. It's why I talk about the Conservative family. When I think about the Conservative family that I see out there campaigning week in, week out, supporting the party, wanting to hear from us, that's a very, very big organisation. Now, part of my job is to convince more of those non-members who are supporters to become members. And that's what we'll be working on over the next few years.
And James, what do the party members think about Brexit? I mean, pick up the Daily Telegraph letters page and they absolutely loathe Chequers, see it as a great betrayal. I'm not quite sure how far that's a barometer of Tory party members in general.
I think one of the things that has happened to the Tory party, which is interesting, is it has become more leave, I would say, in both its voters and its membership since the referendum.
But are these sort of Chequers leavers or harder than Chequers leavers?
Well, I think in one way, Salzburg has helped her again with this.
Yeah.
Because Chequers looked worse when it looked like, you know, if the EU had turned around and said, oh, that's a very nice offer, we'll have that.
Yeah.
Then I think it would have reinforced people's worst fears that, you know, the criticisms that Boris Johnson and David Davis of it would have been kind of vindicated in the eyes of members. The fact that the EU don't like it, I think, weirdly enough, will make some members more sympathetic to it. There is a very delicate balancing act for her on Brexit. I think it is quite telling that she wants to announce this immigration policy at conference, you know, as a cabinet especially convened so it can be kind of pushed through and approved, because she needs something to talk about the positive upside of Brexit, what taking back control will mean afterwards, rather than trying to talk continuously about the state of the negotiations when they are a kind of, to put it mildly, a work in progress. That, I think, is the kind of challenge for her.
And Brandon, will there be any issues raised at Tory party conference that will be more interesting than others when it comes to the consensus amongst members and consensus amongst cabinet?
Look, I think at Commons Week, so we've got a huge fringe this year with a whole range of things, and not just on one topic. I mean, actually, there's a whole range of things going on. And the whole point of fringe, the excitement of it, is people to have that debate, to air new ideas, have that discussion. Look, I think in going back to what James was just talking about, as I say, when I've been doing meetings with members around the country over the summer, talking about the EU and the white paper and the Chequers agreement, actually, one of the things with our members that you come back to time and again that is, I think, runs at the heart of our party is ultimately we're a pragmatic party. Our members are pragmatic. They're focused on getting things done. They want us to deliver on respecting and delivering on that referendum, but in a way that's good for the economy. And when you go through the details behind the white paper, actually, it does deliver on all of those things. And I think ultimately our members will support that, and ultimately will support the Prime Minister to get that deal.
Right. Have you done any sort of polling or research into what Tory party members think of Chequers?
Well, I spent, as I say, a fair bit of time over the summer, as have my colleagues, going around the country, talking to associations. Obviously, as chairman, that is my job.
Were they delighted to see the Chequers proposals, or were they
I have to say, our members are always immensely friendly and polite. I've enjoyed every single debate. Look, the reality is, in our party, Europe has been a debate and a discussion we have had for decades. And it's something that actually, quite rightly, in a wide open tent, it's good to have a proper, robust debate about these things. You always have debate with respect, but robust. Ultimately, as I say, what I've found with our members is they're really pragmatic. Whether they voted leave or remain, and obviously we've got people on both sides of that debate, people want to see us respect the democratic decision, but in a way that's good for the economy. And actually, people are very, you know, enthused about the opportunities that are there with global trade deals and things like that. So I think our members will want to see a deal that delivers all of that, and I think that's what the Prime Minister will be able to bring back.
Do you think realistically you're going to get people to talk about anything other than Brexit at conference?
Well, I think even if you just look at the fringe guide, which is now out there, look at the range of things being discussed. People do want to discuss things that are on the domestic agenda. We saw in the local elections this year, and I think you'll see for the local elections next year, the Conservative Party talking about the issues that matter to people in their local areas. I think it's one of the reasons we were so successful this year. So I think that domestic agenda is there, it's prominent, but I'm not going to pretend that we won't have a fair discussion about Brexit as well. It is a hugely important thing. It's a massive project for the government to undertake, and we've got to make sure we get it right. So it is absolutely right we have a good debate about that.
Brandon and James, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to Coffee House Shots on the iTunes store for free, or to the magazine itself from just £1 a week on spectator.co.uk. And if you're under 25, you can join the Conservative Party for just £5. Go to conservatives.com for details.